Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode 24. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I'm here as usual with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter.
Hi, Rob.
We have much to discuss. We are recording this on a Monday, the 24th of October, and normally we record our podcasts at the end of the week, you know, Thursday, Friday. We skipped Friday in part because we didn't have any internet access.
We had
internet access.
Let's not exaggerate
or overplay our hands. But as readers, listeners would probably know at this point, there was a major DDoS attack on a well-known DNS provider that knocked out several major sites. Not knocked out. I mean, I guess intermittently on and off, shaky connection to a number of popular sites for Eastern U.S. internet users, East Coast, mostly on the East Coast.
And mostly, but it did bleed over.
Yes, it did.
Towards the end, yes. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, it bled. No, you feel free, because you've done most of the work on this. I'm here to, listen, Peter, I'm here to provide the panic. You're here to provide the facts. That's how we're going to do this, okay?
Okay.
Because I am panicking. I joke about building a bunker in my backyard. I don't think I'm quite there yet, but this is starting to worry me a little bit. I mean, I guess I'd be more worried if there was some type of botnet or malware that was turning all my DVRs and wireless cameras and routers and Amazon Echo or whatever it is into sentient robots.
Sentient robots.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
because this botnet is turning all of your stuff into, you know, a vector of evil.
But. Yes, a vector of evil. Oh, I love that. You should rename the podcast. Vector of evil. I love it. It's good with the Halloween theme. So to recap real quick before we get into sort of the latest. Last Friday, DDoS attack, major attack on Dyn, and they reported that it was in three waves pretty much on Friday.
Right.
And they were very powerful waves. And a lot of popular websites, Reddit, Twitter, sites of that nature were Spotify. I mean,
as a survivor of IoT apocalypse,
yes.
2016.
Yes.
Twitter is a big one.
Yep.
New York Times was on the list.
That's right.
Reddit.
Yep.
Boston Globe, even.
Yep.
And a number of others. But personally, my experience with it, Twitter was fine. But whenever I clicked on any of the shortened URLs that Twitter provides so kindly, I got...
Oh, that's right.
T.co is the shortener domain. And when you hit that, it came back and says... Oh, not found, yeah. Or, you know, you've seen the error message. So the frustrating thing is you can hear, you can see what people are saying, but you can't see what they're talking about.
It's a problem.
Yeah, it was, you know, there were other times.
So you had like half Twitter.
Things were slow, so you'd get these tweets with images.
Yeah.
And all you would get is a gray square.
I guess I'd rather have no Twitter than half Twitter. That must have been frustrating.
It was frustrating. I'll tell you. Well, the other thing was that
we're so spoiled.
The first two waves of the attack came before one. I finished up the story by about, I don't know, two.
That's right.
And then I went home.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then I opened up my computer later on that afternoon, and I saw all this stuff going on, and I thought, oh, maybe I'm going to have to write another story about this on Monday, which I have done. And I'm sure that there will be more folds to the story coming out. So we'll probably be covering that again.
Yeah, not to sound like a broken record, I don't think this story is going anywhere. I know I mentioned that with the Akamai IoT malware. I guess it's not malware. The Akamai discovered in a previous podcast, we talked about this, that they discovered an SSH, open SSH vulnerability that was about 12 years old, that had not been addressed in a lot of devices and was being used to exploit numerous cameras, DVRs, devices of that nature that were connected to the internet. And, you know, wasn't using them necessarily to commit DDoS attacks, but was using them to, as proxies, to route malicious traffic. That is relevant when we were discussing this DNS attack, because, I mean, before we get into the update of the latest of what we know, the metrics, all that good stuff that you covered in your story today, let's go back to Bruce Schneier. Now, Bruce wrote about, we've mentioned it many times, Lawfare blog, blog post, September,
yes.
And said, you know, someone is probing the defenses of a number of internet infrastructure companies to test their defenses in an attempt to maybe bring some of these companies down. Maybe not permanently, but with something like a DDoS attack.
I thought he was talking about the probing as a prelude to taking the entire internet.
Oh, yeah, no, he did. I'm saying the probing was testing.
Right, and yes.
You know, he hypothesized that this could be sort of a way that these companies are looking to sort of crush, you know, specific sites, specific providers, DNS, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, fast forward a week, there's the attacks on Krebs, Brian Krebs, InfoSec journalist, his site, Krebs on Security. He's been DDoS many times. A lot of people sort of sat back and said, this is probably just another test, an initiation for hackers, for, you know, the script kiddies out there. They found some, you know, infected routers or whatever. But, I mean, this was a pretty powerful attack. Then there was the attack on OVH, the European service provider. Similar attack, even more powerful. Then you have Akamai coming out and saying, oh, in addition to the Mirai botnet that was used in those attacks, there's also another issue. There's this OpenSSH flaw, the Showdown proxy flaw that they discovered. And so now it's one thing after another. So now there's this DNS attack, and it takes down these, or doesn't take down completely, but creates problems for these sites in, you know, on Friday, on and off through most of the day. And lo and behold, as you wrote about today in your story, Peter, these issues went on for some time through Saturday, correct?
My understanding of the incident report from Dyn was that the attack came in three waves. There was the first wave, which hit about 7 a.m. on Friday, Eastern Time. That took them a couple of hours to respond to and mitigate, and at which point things seemed like they were looking up. And then about, I believe it was an hour after that, later in the morning, there was a second wave, which took responded to and mitigated within about an hour or so. And then they did report that there was a third wave of attack, but it did not really disrupt any of the services. Right. So by the end of the day, things had apparently quieted down. But I think after that, the internet was probably bogged down as a result of all these stories and tweets that were coming out about the attack. Because gotta say, it's always interesting to when we report on the same kind of story, the same story that is being covered in the mainstream press, where you see these stories on the front page of the New York Times, which was affected,
right?
And the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, all of those big newspapers, and Forbes and Fortune were all covering this story. So it's always interesting to see the fallout. And then there was a lot of fallout on Twitter, of course.
Oh yeah, Twitter was a-flutter with this. When you could get on it.
Right, exactly. Yes, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, did they explain, I know they said that they initiated sort of DDoS mitigation, but did they explain exactly what they did to...
In their incident report?
Yeah.
No, they did not. And that's fine.
I don't expect them to sort of reveal, you know, in a detailed nature exactly what they did to sort of solve the issue. But as you know, I mean, this has brought up an issue that a lot of people are talking about, with the inherent problem with having you know, a handful of DNS providers sort of vulnerable to major DDoS attacks, and that having an effect not just on the DNS provider, but on, like, you know, a number of very large sites and a number of internet users, as we saw on Friday, and that sort of being a major issue that needs to be addressed. And if you're going to be a DNS provider and you're going to be supplying a number of these major sites with, you know, their means to have a web address and have a website, then you have to be able to sit back and say, okay, we're prepared for this type of attack. Because now we know that these types of attacks, you know, these 1 terabyte attacks are possible, and they're probably going to be very likely going forward. I mean, it's scary.
And I should clarify, yes, as was clarified on Twitter, when somebody said something about a one terabyte attack.
Yes.
It's a 1 terabit per second attack. So we're talking, you know, if it goes on for a minute, that's 60 terabytes.
Oh,
that's,
yeah. No,
right. So this is big stuff. But yeah, as far as this, you know, as far as how they defend against these things, I think that they're looking, and in fact, if I remember correctly, in the Dyn incident report, they did say that they didn't want to get into too many details, particularly of the third wave attack, because they, you know, they want to hold something a little bit close to their vest so that they have something in reserve. Given what Bruce Schneier has told us in his report about the, I don't know how to refer to the entity that he's talking about in there, that this mysterious, murky, the unknown threat actor. Yeah, I guess that's a good way to refer to him. Unknown threat actor.
UTA.
Sure, UTA.
UFO. UTA.
UTA.
NTI.
We could call them a existential threat.
Well, let's not go there. I mean, well, but yeah,
whatever it is, and there is no indication. You know, Bruce Schneier is a pretty smart guy.
Yep.
I'm gonna, you know, if he says that he doesn't think that this is the same group,
yeah,
then that carries a lot more weight than if you or I say it.
Obviously. I mean, we haven't done any sort of investigation into who's behind this one, but, like, let's dial it back a little bit. So earlier this month was when, you know, when Michael Heller, senior reporter at Search Security, had written a story about how the source code for the Mirai botnet, which was used in those DDoS attacks on Krebs and OVH, had been released on a hacker forum by a user known as Senpai, Anna Senpai.
Right.
And, you know, this, people sort of sat back and said, oh, well, this is not good, because, yeah, we have the source code and you can figure out how this works, but you can't necessarily, you know, push out patches for a lot of these devices that will respond, you know, that will protect against this type of botnet. And now anybody can pick up this botnet code and start unleashing attacks. And you don't even really have to be skilled. And I think if I remember correctly, Schneier had written about this particular attack, the Dyn attack, that he didn't think it was necessarily China or, you know, a nation state hacker, but it could have been anybody. And I think Brian Krebs in his post today had mentioned that he had heard from a source or two, unnamed source or two, that there was chatter about, you know, folks on cybercrime or hacker forums talking about unleashing an attack on a DNS provider, and had mentioned Dyn specifically. So, yeah, I mean, this... So let's sort of take that at face value. Let's just assume that this is, you know, this is your run-of-the-mill cybercrime hackers. I have an alternate theory, which I'll introduce in a minute. But let's say it's just your average hacker, not very skilled, not necessarily, you know, a criminal mastermind, but they pick up this code. And we should mention that Flashpoint, you mentioned this in your story, Flashpoint, the security firm, did some intel on this. They released a report and they said, yeah, the Mirai botnet was part of the attack, the DNS DDoS attack on dined, but it didn't make up the whole thing. And we should, Peter, I'll let you do the honors on this. How many IP addresses were involved in this?
Exactly tens of millions of IP addresses.
Tens of millions. That's a lot of IP addresses.
Right, but keep in mind that IP addresses are eminently spoofable.
They are.
So we did have one of the points that I addressed was that, yeah, you actually, I've got the article just went live, so nice. I can't even refer to it. But Chester Wisniewski of principal research scientist at Sophos noted that while Dyn had detected a huge number of IP addresses involved in the attack, could correlate with the number, with the actual number of IoT things that were enrolled in the botnet, it could also be a matter of spoofing. So he said, technically, and I quote, technically the attack could have originated from a single source, single device, although many believe the number of devices involved in the attack to be somewhere around 50,000, which is still, that's a pretty large number of things to be attacking you.
Right, and to be able to wreak that kind of chaos and havoc with, I mean.
Yeah.
So now we're in a world where, let's say you get mad because, you got banned for cheating in your favorite online game. Well, now, you know, you just go online, you go to that hacker forum, you get the botnet code, or you find some other tricks, or you exploit the Showdown proxy, and now you can not only initiate a DDoS attack on a major website or their DNS provider and take out even more and create more collateral damage, but you can route the traffic, you can hide. I mean, once you have control of these devices, you can do a lot of things, despite the fact that these devices are not intelligent. They're not very smart. They have limited functionality, but they have enough functionality that you can create SSH tunnels and do all sorts of things that create major problems.
Right.
Oh, man. All right, so an alternate theory. Okay. Now, I agree with Bruce Schneier. It's probably not China. It's probably not Russia. It could be just your run-of-the-mill cyber criminals looking to create problems, maybe start getting into the business of DDoS extortion. That's been thrown out there. I don't think it's WikiLeaks supporters. WikiLeaks, this is unreal. WikiLeaks tweeted on Friday in sort of the aftermath of this. They said, they issued a call to supporters to stop taking down the internet in protest of Julian Assange losing his internet access in the Ecuador embassy. It's really amazing. So here's my thing. What's the point of doing this now? I'm still kind of struggling with this. I go back to sort of the Mirai botnet malware attack on Krebs. Like, I get it. People DDoS Krebs all the time to give them grief. But you just used, I mean, a pretty big attack method with the Mirai botnet, and now that code's online, to launch an attack on a guy that, okay, his site goes down for a couple of days, and now he's back. You know, I'm thinking, like, if you really wanted to do some damage, you would have used these DDoS exploits, attacks, Mirai botnet, what have you, on something very, like a specific timed event to create major, you know, chaos, whether it's, you know, something like Election Day or something else. But they didn't. And so, yeah, the code was released online from Mirai botnet, and it's out there and anybody can use it. But now, I mean, now people can at least analyze it and maybe say, well, we got to build in defenses in new devices. I'm not saying that's going to happen because we haven't heard anything from manufacturers about that. But same with this DNS attack. So now the DNS providers know that these attacks are capable or that are possible, and they know that their defenses have to be up to task for that. And they know that there are certain devices out there that need to be guarded against this. You already have that manufacturer from China doing a recall on those webcams. Who knows if they can fix them or not. But it's like you've tipped your hand. Like you, like now you've made people aware that this is possible. And I'm not going to say that I think this is benevolent hacking, as if to warn the industry that these things are possible. And hey, get your act together, because if you don't, we're going to start doing more of this. But I do wonder, maybe there's an element of that, because we haven't seen any sort of financial demands. We haven't seen any sort of extortion attempts, or like, I guess, irreparable damage, you know, where something, you know, like a timed event, a very specific timeline is disrupted because of these attacks. And maybe the people that are doing these things in maybe one case or maybe all cases recently are doing it to say, this is how bad our internet infrastructure is. This is how bad the system is with IoT devices, and how messed up, for lack of a better term, I almost said a bad word, the situation is. And if we don't do something soon, it is going to be Russia who's going to come in and do something, or someone worse than us, and start demanding money or start shutting down critical services, and you won't get them back. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, the attack did just seem to be limited to Dyn, and yeah, not to, you know, to multiple DNS providers, which I meant to mention earlier. One of the things that you can do to mitigate against an attack against a DNS provider is to have more than one.
Right. Switch it over.
You have two or three that you can switch around among, because you've got a list of DNS servers.
Yep.
If all your DNS servers are located with the same provider, and that provider comes under attack, well, all of them are going to be under attack. Whereas if you have three providers that you can, you know, rotate among, it's not going to make the providers happy, because they would much rather have a contract for doing all of it.
But yeah,
you know, and it's not going to make IT people happy, because having to deal with three vendors is a lot harder than having to deal with one.
I know.
Or even two.
But if you're an enterprise, yeah, like okay, Amazon or Reddit or whoever, yeah, no big deal. But if you're a mid-market enterprise, you're relying on the same DNS provider.
Right. Well, and the question of, you know, why are they doing it? Is there any possible benefit from that we can all get from this? Well, maybe there is. You know, it's a warning sign. But as far as having a rationale, having a logical reason for doing some of these damaging malicious attacks that don't have any, you know, number one, maybe, first of all, we found out over the weekend that, and this morning, that there are people that, and prior to this, there are people that will provide a DDoS for you for money, you know.
Yep. DDoS is a service.
Exactly.
Which we should note, Krebs wrote a story before the DDoS attack on his site that kind of kicked off this whole mess. He wrote a story about a couple of guys over in, I believe, Israel who had been arrested for running a DDoS as a service outfit.
Right. And
arrested and charged with, allegedly, I should say.
Right. And the thing about it, the thing that we should keep in mind is the people who were arrested were pretty young. So it's not like you have to have 20 years of hacking the internet and TCP/IP protocols to be able to do this.
Yeah,
you can, you know, and I think there was another arrest of somebody very recently, another 19-year-old young person who got picked up for I can't recall if it was a stressor service that he was providing or...
Oh, might have been. But yeah, that sounds familiar.
And the two young Israelis that were picked up, they also were, I think, 19 and 17. So we're not talking, you know, these guys don't have PhDs in anything, I'm pretty sure.
Just going through a rebellious phase as well.
Yes, exactly.
They're kids.
I mean, yeah, they're kids. Kids will be,
boys will be boys.
Yeah.
Hackers be hackers.
Hackers will be hackers, yeah. Right. But so whatever it is that they're doing, do they have a reason for it just beyond they can? I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll find out. I'm sure there's going to be echoes and reverberations from this event. Yeah.
So I guess the two things before we wrap up here, because I don't, we could go on all day about this, and sure. I'm sure we'll probably be back in here in a few days talking about the same.
Oh, I want to talk about Dirty Cow soon, but not today.
Yeah, Dirty Cow. I keep calling it Mad Cow, but that's my cross to bear.
Right. It's a Linux vulnerability, which apparently, even though it's not a, it's
so
not a,
bad.
It's not a remote code execution. It's an escalation of privilege.
Yeah.
But it got its own logo and website and Twitter account, and apparently it's pretty serious. Listen, because once you get in there with the escalated privileges, you can.
If you don't have your own branded name and your own Twitter account, you're nothing these days in the world of hacks and exploits and malware. So.
But I'm sorry to.
No. I was just going to say, okay, what do we do? You know, what do we do about these devices? The Chinese firm, Chinese manufacturer that issued a lot of these webcams and I think other devices they manufacture too, that were used in this attack. Not all, but a lot of them. They've been recalled. Who knows how long it's going to take to fix them or what they can do. But apparently the word is you can't do a remote fix that's going to cure what ails these things, even if you change the password. And, you know, going back to the open SSH flaw. I mean, you can't, like, even if you change the password, you're still vulnerable to a showdown proxy type attack. So, you know, some people have said, oh, well, maybe the government needs to step in and prohibit these types of devices from being sold in America through sites like Amazon or wherever. You know, tell them you can't sell these things unless they have proven security measures in place. But that's not really going to stop the problem, because they're going to sell them in other countries that maybe don't have that. Now we're really in trouble. So the topic of Rule 41, oh God, was thrown about. And, you know, quick review of Rule 41. Rule 41 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, which basically allow for law enforcement agencies to conduct, hack or remotely gain entry into people's computers, whether they're suspects or victims of a cyber attack. And which is pretty crazy, but, like, you know, the people have been speculating that you may be able to use something like Rule 41 to remotely go into some of these devices and either turn off functionality or literally brick them to prevent them from being used. Now, that seems a little drastic to me, but, like, I mean, what else are you left with? If, like, let's say, Peter, like you said, this was one DNS provider. Let's say it was three or four. And it wasn't just a handful of major sites. It was a lot of sites, and it was across the country. It's Black Friday. It's Black Friday. No, worse, Peter. Cyber Monday. Cyber Monday. I'm probably giving these hackers ideas. I should just shut my mouth. Well, I'm sure they've already thought of it. But, like, what's the recourse? I mean, do you think it's feasible that DHS or whatever federal agency would step in and say, well, we're going to take Rule 41, and we're going to take it to these devices and shut off all webcams and wireless? I mean, it seems like something out of a sci-fi movie, but...
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, the thing about Rule 41, the power that the FBI wants to get on Rule 41 does not... I'm not sure. I think it's December 15th.
I believe that's right. It's coming up.
It's coming up.
Oh, conspiracy. Maybe it's the FBI behind it, and they're trying to...
Oh, maybe.
They're trying to expand their power.
Right, but the question...
Strike that from the record. Go ahead, sorry.
It's already been recorded.
Yeah, I know. They can listen to us. They're listening to us through the phones.
But, okay, so to answer your question, what can we do? What can be done? I think we have to depend on our DNS providers. I mean, there's things like DNSSEC. Mm. There's, you know, I want to say DKIM and DMARC, and there's probably two or three other things that have to do with strengthening the DNS infrastructure, right, and making it more resistant to this kind of an attack. And I think we can move in that direction, but there's no overall authority that directs what happens on the internet. We can make the ICANN and IETF, they can all make recommendations, and they can set protocol standards and all that kind of stuff, but they can't say you've got to be, you can't run Windows XP anymore, Rob.
Yeah, I know.
You gotta upgrade that Windows XP box you got running on your printer server, or whatever.
No, I know. Yeah.
You know, whatever we're all of these things. So we don't have an authority like that, and I don't think
we can't wait for Congress to do it either.
Well, Congress can only has authority over one country. And there's what, 200 something countries in the world. So yeah, as far as how do we deal with it? Well, we're just going to have to deal with it, and that means allowing the people who know what they're doing. I think it would be great if we could get somebody like Paul Vixie, who we've spoken with in the past here at Search Security, for articles. Who he's one of the, you know, one of the. Grand old names or grand old experts of DNS and internet in general. So some of the things that he can tell us will probably give us more guidance over this. But these things are going to happen. We're gonna keep fighting. It's gonna, as we've said before, risk and repeat. We're gonna repeat this iterative process of responding to attacks and trying to come up with fixes. And eventually, we're gonna have an equilibrium of some sort. Whether that equilibrium will be in favor of the good guys or the bad guys is yet to be seen. Hopefully it'll be the good guys.
Yeah. And like I said, at least now we know that these are coming, and there's not going to be any excuse that we didn't know these things were possible and we didn't know there was an issue. So I guess there's some benefit to that, which is, I guess we should end on the positive note.
Sure.
But yeah, I think we're going to be back in here real soon discussing this topic again as more attacks crop up and as we learn more about this specific DNS attack. So, Peter, I want to thank you as usual for discussing this with me.
Always glad to be here.
And look forward to discussing it again probably in the very near future. So
Friday.
Or sooner, who knows? We may have to have an emergency podcast. So... perish the thought. And thanks to all the readers, listeners, etc. for Search Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. As usual, I am Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.